morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday morning, although in Milwaukee, it really looks like it's 10 o'clock at night. I think it's going to rain today. We are going to talk about health care this hour of the program. I don't even know if you know this, but there was a website that was announced yesterday and a toll-free number. The Secretary of Health and Human Services, Kathleen Sebelius, said that the new website and toll-free number have a simple mission to make sure every American who needs health coverage has the information they need to make choices that are right for themselves and their families. And is that website ever needed? Polls are showing that many Americans have absolutely no idea how the new insurance markets will work, what kind of coverage they provide. There was a poll by Kaiser Foundation in April showed, this is astounding, 42% of Americans didn't even know that Obamacare is still a law. The last time we talked about this issue, we were flooded with phone calls, and I assume that that will be the case today. We will have two guests with us who will talk about the website, and we'll talk about this toll-free number, what's kicking in January, what happens in October, who needs to be perusing this website right now. Our first guest is Jeffrey Young, healthcare reporter for the Huffington Post, and later we'll be speaking with Robert Field, a professor of health management and policy at the School of Public Health at Drexel University. He is the author, among other works, of Healthcare Regulation in America, Complexity, Confrontation, and Compromise. Here's how you reach our conversation today. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, leave messages there if you would like, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Jeffrey Young, healthcare reporter for The Huffington Post. Hello.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Every time we do a show on this, as I just said, people just don't have much of a clue as to what's going on. Why do you think the administration waited until almost the 1st of July to roll out a website and a toll-free number?
Well, I should say that this is the newer version of the website. There was one that's been up for a couple of years that had descriptive information about the contents of the law, the Affordable Care Act. What they did yesterday is they launched a new version of it that lets you sort of punch in some basic information about yourself and get some early idea of what your options may be. What the website is missing, as some readers pointed out to me yesterday, is the prices for the insurance, because we don't know what all that is yet, and very likely won't know until maybe September, which is only a month before the health insurance exchanges for individuals and small companies will open up. As far as the stretch between now and the beginning of the 6-month enrollment period in October, and you know why we're maybe just starting to see some of the promotional activities going on. The administration's point of view, and this is consistent with some of the outside groups that are trying to do the same thing, is that if you jump out too far away from the 1st of October, that is, too far away from the day when people can actually find out what's available and how much it costs, you may lose their attention. I have to say that as far as the polling, and you mentioned the Kaiser Family Foundation poll showing the poor yes. understanding among the public of the law, and as you mentioned, so many people think that it's not even the law. I write about this every day, so I'm biased in that regard, but I have to confess to being a little surprised by that, only because for the last 4 years, essentially, there has been a national political conversation about this. It's been all over the news in every medium. So, I'm not sure what else the administration could have been doing over the last 4 years other than keep talking about it, which they have. And I know because I've been writing about it. I think fundamentally that there's a couple of things underneath that the confusion about this. One is that health insurance is confusing. The product itself is confusing, yes. and it's hard to buy. And I think those of us who have had occasion in our lives to have to get it ourselves rather than get it through work may have a little more insight and a little more intuitive understanding of what is going to be required of us starting this fall than people who, they get it at work and their company picks the plan and that's that. Another thing is that because of that years-long political debate, people tend to hear the arguments coming from the side they already agree with, and that sort of locks people into their views. And the polls reveal that too. That if you split the polls up by Democrat versus Republican, liberal versus conservative, the support and opposition goes just right where you'd think it would be. And now all that's going to have to change pretty soon, or it could be a giant headache. And I don't mean for the president. I mean for the millions of people who are now going to be required to have health insurance and are going to need to figure out how to get it and whether they qualify for any subsidies. And mm-hmm. the only way to do that is by going to these websites.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about the number of people, Jeffrey, who get it at work, and that's that, how many people is that? What percentage of the population?
It's about, I'm sorry, I can't recall exactly, but I think it's about 160 million U.S. residents are enrolled in employer-based health benefits. That includes the worker and their dependents. A very small, and then, of course, you've got everyone who's on Medicare, everyone over 65, lots of people with disabilities and some other folks as well who are on Medicare. That's another big chunk of the population. And then you've got Medicaid, the Children's Health Insurance Program, things like the VA, et cetera. So when you get down to it, the health insurance exchanges that are opening up for individuals and their families really only apply to a sliver of the population. I think right now only about 5% of people who have insurance buy it on the individual market, where they're shopping for it on their own without a company or a government program to provide the benefits to them. That number is going to grow because you've got tens of millions of uninsured people who are, in many ways, the primary target of this law. Between the expansion of Medicaid, which of course is not happening in Wisconsin, and the tax credit subsidies being made available to people who make up to four times poverty. Many of those people don't have health insurance because they can't afford it, and or they have medical conditions that either make them uninsurable for the health plans, or if they want to get insured, it's incredibly expensive. Or, for example, someone who has diabetes, the plan will cover everything but their diabetes. Mm-hmm. That's going to change because they can't do that anymore. But what this means is that many, many people have been turned away or not even bothered to try to buy health insurance before, and they've never used it. They don't understand the terminology. They don't really know how to shop for it. And what I've found in some interviews I've been doing recently is that a lot of those folks who had negative experiences with health insurance, either they got rejected or their rates went up a lot because they got sick, they don't trust the insurance companies, just like a lot of folks don't trust the government to get this right. They're skeptical that insurance could ever be something that can't be taken away from them because they develop an illness.
Mm-hmm. Is that well-founded skepticism from your reporting on this?
Well, in today's market, yes, because for the most part, in almost every state, and there's variance, and I confess I don't know what the laws are in Wisconsin, but in most states, an insurance company can choose to insure you or not insure you. And again, if you think about it as being similar in that regard to other kinds of insurance, if you're a bad driver, right, if you've been in a bunch of accidents, you've got a lot of speeding tickets, you may find it very difficult to get auto insurance. Likewise, although there's some crucial differences, if you have chronic health conditions, if you've had cancer, if you have diabetes, if you have something that requires constant care over the course of your lifetime, an insurance company will look at you and say, this person is going to cost us a fortune. We don't want to do business with them.
Right.
They won't be able to do that anymore. So that's one big change. What goes along with that, though, is that because they won't be able to turn anyone down, the expectation is lots of people who are excluded from today's health insurance market because of their medical conditions will be clamoring to get coverage under this law, because in all likelihood, it'll be that first, they're guaranteed access to it, and second, it will very likely be less expensive for them than today because the insurance company can't charge them more just because they've had illnesses in their past. But what goes along with that is that if you are in the small sliver of the population today who is very healthy and gets really inexpensive insurance, especially if it has a bare-bones benefit package, you may see your prices go up if you earn more than four times the poverty level and have to pay the full cost of it yourself.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about young people for a moment. We've heard that young people will make or break this system, that many of them don't have health insurance because they are young and healthy. They will have to get insurance. Is there a specific campaign to reach these young people? Will they sign up for these exchanges?
Yeah, there's actually going to be a lot of activity around trying to appeal to this market. And just to bolster your point, you know, younger people are more likely to not have health insurance than, you know, older people. And it sort of goes down as people get older, the rate of uninsurance. And also, and this is logical, but I think people forget this often, if you are younger, that is if you're under 30, odds are you're very early in your career and your earnings are lower than an older person. If you combine these two things, there's a potential opportunity here to get lots of people in that age set covered, because many, many of them will qualify for federal subsidies to cut down the price of their insurance. Not all of them will, but many of them will. There's also, I think, myth may be a bit of a strong word, but there's a truism that people cite all the time that, oh, well, you know, if you're 24, you think you're never going to die and you'll never going to get sick, so health insurance is a waste of money. And, you know, some people do obviously feel that way, but there was a poll that came out last week that showed that, looking at the numbers right here, people 18 to 25, 77% said that health insurance was something that was important. And that they, and another very large percent said they worried about the effects of, you know, a potentially large medical bill on their finances. So in that sense, you know, people who are under 30 years old don't, all of them, don't think that they're invulnerable. And if you can, and this will be difficult, I think, but if you can tap into that and also persuade these young people that, hey, a lot of you are going to be able to get some subsidies for this, that could go a long way into making sure that not only sick people sign up for health insurance. And the administration is looking at a number of ways of trying to reach this segment of the population. Directly and indirectly, I've heard some talk recently about sort of marketing and promotional campaigns that target the mothers of young adults who are seen as influencers, the sort of people who can say to their 20-something child, you need to get health insurance. In my case, when I finished college, my father said to me that I needed to get health insurance because he didn't want to have to mortgage his house if I get hit by a bus. That sort of stuff can make you see the world a little bit differently than you might otherwise do at 22.
Right.
And there was one thing that emerged yesterday. Some reporters were at the Department of Health and Human Services meeting with Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, and she mentioned that she's been in talks with the NFL about doing some promotional activities around trying to convince people that it's worthwhile to enroll in health insurance. Politico reported last week that similar conversations had been going on with the NBA, and I called Major League Baseball yesterday, and they said that there had been a meeting scheduled at one point, so they're talking to them as well. And it makes a lot of sense, especially for younger men who not only make up a bulk of the fan base for pro sports, but also maybe the hardest ones to sell this to, because compared to women, your younger women now, the law won't permit insurance companies to charge women more than men anymore, starting, you know, next year. Mm-hmm. And that could be a big change for a lot of women, because the law also requires maternity care be covered, and it requires that birth control be provided without a copayment. So those are fairly easy things to sell to women customers, but in a way, for women not being charged more for insurance or getting their maternity care covered or getting their birth control covered without a copay means that that money's got to be made up somewhere else. So men, in a way, will be chipping in for those things they haven't had to do before, which also could have the effect of making their insurance a little bit more expensive. So it's sort of important to get that message in front of that part of the population. And this has been done before. Back in 2007, when Massachusetts put its health care reform law into place, which is, of course, very, very similar to the federal law that we're seeing roll out right now, they teamed up with the Boston Red Sox. And that was viewed as a big success, not only because it got the message in front of a lot of people and a lot of the right kind of people, so to speak, but also because, you know, sports teams and sports are not partisan things. what the administration is trying to do, and I don't know that it'll be possible, but they're trying to separate the political argument over whether Obamacare was or was not a good idea with the practical matter that now there's a mandate that pretty much everybody gets health insurance. This is where you go get it if you don't get it at work, and this is how you got to get through the process. There's a lot of logistical stuff that's going to affect people's daily lives starting next year. That's going to happen whether you voted for Obama or not.
It is so, a law.
So right, exactly. So, you know, having, say, the NFL, if they decide to go along with this, you know, having promos that say, hey, everybody, October 1st is coming up and you need to buy health insurance and here's some resources mm-hmm. that you can use to figure out whether you can get a good deal or not. That's not quite the same thing as saying Obamacare is the greatest thing since sliced
right,
bread and where the
right.
NFL will be endorsed the Democratic Party.
It sure isn't. Jeffrey Young is our guest, and Jeffrey is healthcare reporter for the Huffington Post. He's been writing about Affordable Care Act, Obamacare for 4 years. Well, yesterday the administration launched a consumer information website to help people maneuver all of this. It's the beginning of the real rollout of the Affordable Care Act, and we're talking about this resource. It's a website, and it's a toll-free number, and what you can get if you go there, and who should be going there. We welcome your phone calls. We have a few more minutes with Jeffrey. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm sure there are many of you listening who have questions about what this all means. If you get it at work, that's that, and you're probably not thinking about this very much, but I'm sure you know people who are with small businesses or who are going to be using these exchanges, so the questions will be answered, and there are the phone calls. Want to let you know that we are keeping our eyes, Rhonda is keeping her eyes on the Supreme Court this morning, and they did just make this announcement, which makes you think that maybe it's later in the week for gay marriage decisions. Supreme Court says Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act is unconstitutional, 5-4 vote. The court makes clear that, quote, our decision in no way affects the permanent nationwide ban on racial discrimination in voting found in Section 2. We issue no holding on Section 5 itself, only on the coverage formula. Congress may draft another formula based on current conditions. So that's today's announcement. To your phone calls, we've got a lot of them. In just a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I do want to remind you, or maybe this is news to you, that this program is going to be moving, same show, different time, to a different time starting Monday, July 1st. Our show will be airing from 1 to 3 in the afternoon. For those of you who are not aware of it, Talk of the Nation is going off the air, a show that I really enjoyed, and I'm sorry to see that happening, but it is happening this Thursday, and so we are moving into that time slot. Still taking your phone calls. We do similar kinds of programs to Talk of the Nation, same kinds of topics. And this change will take place Monday, 1 to 3. This show will be on the air from 9 to 11 in the morning, Monday through Thursday, on Point, which will be carried live now from Boston. So there are other changes, too. We advise you to go to our website, WPR.org, to get a rundown of all the changes. Jeffrey Young is our guest, healthcare reporter for the Huffington Post. For a few more minutes, let's go to this email or Facebook. Jody asks, will we be able to compare premium prices in the exchanges? Will we also be able to compare the contracted prices that each insurance company has with providers? For someone who hopes to not meet their deductible, this is a huge consideration.
Well, the first question is easy to answer, and that's yes. Once the federal government and the states are finished, you know, working out with the insurance companies what the rates are going to be, all that information will be on the exchange websites. It'll be on the phone number you can call, and there'll be some opportunities to sign up for coverage in person as well in different places in the community. The website will also show you how much you actually pay. And what I mean is the premium could be X, but if you qualify for a subsidy because your earnings are between the poverty level and four times poverty, then it will show you the amount that you have to pay. And the difference, that is the subsidy, will go directly to the health insurance company. So, you know, the plan could could cost $300 a month, but your premium may only be $125, and the federal government sends the insurance company the difference. On the second point, I don't think so. I don't know for sure, but I've never heard anyone mention that. Getting that information about what insurance plans pay for procedures to doctors, hospitals, et cetera, is very, very difficult. The companies tend to guard that information very closely because if you're company A, you don't want company B to know the deal you got with the hospital, and neither does the hospital, because then everyone will just demand the lowest rate. Some insurance companies are starting to make some of this information available on their own websites. I was looking at some information last year on the website for Cigna, which mainly does employer plans, but where you can look up a typical like a typical physician office visit or a typical hospital stay, and you can't get exact, perfectly detailed information, but you can at least get a sense of this might run you around $300. So you can plan ahead, especially if you have a health savings account or a flexible savings account that you're using to pay for your medical expenses while you're under your deductible.
Let's go to David in Stevens Point. Hi, David. David, hi.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes, David, go ahead.
Yes, I'm hearing all this effort to promote health insurance enrollment, but I would think the thing that would really encourage enrollment would be cutting costs, and that's what Obama ran on in 2008. I don't see the cost going up. My insurance has gone up at least 10% a year for 7 years. It's double what it was back in 2007, and instead of having five kids and a husband and wife, it's now just two kids. To be paying double the insurance for half the family size, I don't see anything being done to cut costs.
Well, if you're talking about your insurance over the last few years, none of the things in this law had really kicked in that would have had that effect. A few small things. Just last week, and this only affected a fraction of the country, but some people got rebates back because their insurance companies didn't spend enough on medical care and spent too much on overhead. Those things are around the margins. There's also something else happening more broadly, not about the cost of insurance per se, but about how quickly the cost of health care itself, that is how much the entire nation spends on all kinds of health care. The last 3 years in a row, it has started to grow more slowly than it has in decades. People have a lot of opinions about why that is. No one seems to know for sure. A lot of it has to do, apparently, with the fact that so many people lost their jobs and lost their health insurance a few years ago, and many of whom are still unemployed or uninsured, that they're just not going to the doctor. But there seem to be some signs that there are things happening below the surface that may be squeezing down inflation in health care prices and in health care costs, such as the law cuts Medicare payments to hospitals, and those hospitals have been doing things to become more efficient. If that works and it holds, it may take 5 or 10 years before we really know. That could make people's insurance rates increase more slowly. I don't know, and I think the president sort of said this when he was running back in 08, and it's hard to believe then, and it's hard to believe now. But it's sort of impossible to imagine health insurance just getting cheaper per se. Nothing ever gets cheaper. Things always get more expensive. Just sometimes they get more expensive more slowly. And this may not apply to the caller circumstances, but as I said before, there are some people who, because they'll qualify for subsidies or because they currently have medical conditions, they will see their insurance premiums go down.
And when will you see a really full-fledged debate on the cost of health care take place in Congress? Isn't it long overdue?
Well, of course, the problem here, if you talk about it as a political issue, is that when we discuss reducing health care costs, what you're talking about is putting less money in the pockets of lots of people like doctors, hospitals, drug companies, etc., right? Mm-hmm. And then all the people who work for those companies. So it's not so simple as just saying, oh, we should spend less on this. Are people spending the money want to spend less, but the people making the money don't want to make less. I often wonder what people mean when they say that, cut costs where. The other thing, too, is that if you cut costs in a ham-handed way, then you actually are just literally rationing who gets what when. That's one way of doing it. I think that, when Congress wrote this particular law, they crammed a bunch of stuff in there. Cuts to hospitals, for example, linking payments under Medicare to how well the patients fare, not just how often they go in for procedures, setting up scenarios where doctors, hospitals, nurses, et cetera, are all sharing some financial risk where if they keep costs down, they get to keep the difference. But if the costs go above a certain amount, then they make less money. These are all experiments. Some of them may work, some of them may not. But with a system this large, and as people always point out, it's, you know, it's 20% or something like that of the entire U.S. economy, you can't really, I don't think you can, we can expect any fast results on any of this stuff. But hopefully some of these things will work and we'll learn which ones do and can apply them, you know, more broadly.
One more phone call for you. Same topic then. We're just changing guests. Pat in Oshkosh. Hi, Pat. Pat, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is about the income eligibility for subsidies. It's a 4 times poverty level. I understand that. But I have a situation where my husband is on Medicare, and I will be buying through the exchanges. And I wonder, do I count as a single person for 4 times poverty level, or will they take our combined income? I have been through every word on the web about this for a year, and I cannot get the answer to that.
You know, I'm afraid I hadn't considered that. I mean, this may help you find more information. The income measure that they'll be using to determine, you know, what you make and what you qualify for, they call modified adjusted gross income, which is a wonderfully, you know, federalese turn of phrase. But it's basically, you know, whatever you file in your taxes. That's what that is, you know, whatever your taxable income is. But I don't know how it works if, you know, one spouse is enrolled in a different health plan, or in this case, especially since it's Medicare, there may be a special consideration for that. And I feel a little funny saying this because I don't want to sound like a commercial or anything, but you might want to call that phone number they set up yesterday, because that's what those people are there to do, is to answer questions like that. If you go to healthcare.gov, you can find the number. And you can call, and maybe they can help you with specific information about your circumstance.
We have the number up here, 800-318-2596, 800-318-2596. Got it, Pat?
Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Jeffrey, you're going to have a busy summer. Not that, your whole life isn't busy, but there's a lot people need to know.
Yeah, and there's going to be a lot of noise around this too. You know, I mean, we talked, you know, I mentioned some of the people who, you know, because they're sick or because they have low incomes may end up, you know, in a better situation because of this law, but there's going to be some disruption as well. You know, there's going to be, as I mentioned, some people where they may see their premiums go up more than they otherwise would have, partly because the law requires the benefits to be better than you can buy today. But, you know, I think everyone's heard these stories about situations where, you know, companies that have a lot of hourly employees are looking at reducing hours so they don't have to cover them. You know, there's going to be a lot of anecdotes out there. Mm-hmm. One person's better off, one person's worse off. And it's going to be hard to tell, I think, for most people what the totality of the change really looks like.
Well, that's your job, sir, right?
I'll do my best.
You will let us know. Thanks, Jeffrey, so much.
My pleasure.
Jeffrey Young, healthcare reporter for The Huffington Post. We are talking about a new consumer information website that was put up by the Obama administration yesterday to help guide people through the Affordable Care Act. There is also a toll-free number that you can call. And things are moving pretty rapidly on this front. People can start signing up for the exchanges in October, and then they'll be rolling out in January. So for a population that doesn't seem to know very much about this, now is the time, so you don't get caught without any information and not being able to sign up and not understanding what Jeffrey said. And I think he's absolutely right. It's still a pretty complicated situation. It's confusing. There are too many parts to the whole. We're going to continue welcoming phone calls. Our number remaining, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Professor Robert Field is joining us now. Professor Field is a professor of Health Management and Policy, School of Public Health at Drexel University. He's a nationally known expert on health law and public health, whose research focuses on ethical issues in managed care, public policy, and legal facets of healthcare reform, and also genetic screening. He also holds an appointment as a professor of law. He's the author of Healthcare Regulation in America, Complexity, Confrontation, and Compromise. It's a comprehensive guide to the government's role in regulating healthcare in the United States. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Professor Robert Field, hello. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Happy to be here.
Well, do you have any idea what hopes the administration has? I'm wondering the number of people who are uninsured now in this country and how many people this Affordable Care Act hopes to have insured by the middle of next year.
Yeah. Initially, it'll be fairly modest. They're looking at something like 7 million on the exchanges and 8 million added to the Medicaid rolls. So something like 15 million more insured out of a total of 50 million uninsured right now. That number is projected to go up in the next few years so that the law will cover about 25 million. In other words, about half of those who are presently uninsured.
Mm-hmm. Our last guest was talking, and I think this is absolutely true. Why in the world does all of this have to be so darn complicated? No wonder it's hard for people to sign up and to maneuver through everything.
Right. Well, part of it is that healthcare is complicated. There's no way to navigate a system as complex as this to finance it, especially with all of the high-tech care, all of the advances we've had, in a simple way. Your argument actually is used by both sides of the political spectrum. The opponents of Obamacare say it's too complicated, it's creating a bureaucracy, it's adding all this administrative overhead, people are going to be confused and it's not going to work. People on the other side of the political spectrum say, well, this is the argument for a single-payer plan.
Right.
We should just have Medicare for all. And then it's one agency. Medicare seems to work exceptionally well, and just everyone gets their insurance there. So this is kind of a middle-range plan. It's using the private sector. It's trying to harness market competition. But when it comes to something as complicated as health care and as complicated as insurance, it's going to have to be this complex.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at it, or maybe I'm wrong here, the number of people who already get health insurance via their employers in this country is the vast majority. So we're looking at a small group of Americans who need to sign up for this, right? Or it's not going to work.
Right, right. Well, I think, as Jeffrey was saying in the last half hour, something like 155 to 160 million Americans, maybe a little bit more than half the nation's total, get insurance either through their employer or they're a dependent of someone who has employer-based coverage. So they won't be affected by this at all. People who get Medicare, 65 plus, won't be affected. If you get Medicaid, either now or under the expanded version, you won't be affected. If you're a veteran and you get VA coverage, Department of Defense, none of those people will be affected. Right now, about 5% of the population gets their coverage directly through an insurer. With the marketplaces, the exchanges going into effect, that will be maybe 10 to 15% of the population, but we're still looking at something that affects only a tiny minority. But most people don't realize that. The communication has been so poor over this,
right,
that most people don't understand that this law will not affect them, and those who are affected by the law don't seem to understand how to navigate it.
Because this was such a political issue, as you well know, there are some states, including Wisconsin, that are not expanding Medicaid. And there are people in this state, and I'm sure other states are in the same situation, who are worried about those people who will no longer be a part of Badger Care here in Wisconsin and won't be a part of an expanded Medicaid. So we're looking at, I don't know, maybe 84,000 people. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen to those people? There have to be many of them in other states as well.
Yeah, and Pennsylvania faces the same situation. Our governor has so far declined to expand Medicaid, although he's left the door open a little bit to change his mind. It's going to be a gap in the law and an unfortunate gap because it will affect the neediest people.
Mm.
If you go to one of these exchanges to buy your own policy, you qualify for financial assistance if you earn between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level. If you earn less than 100%, you are not eligible for a subsidy, and that's because the drafters of the law assumed all those people would get Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
If your state has not expanded Medicaid and you make less than 100%, you may still not qualify, because Medicaid in its present form only applies to four distinct categories of people: pregnant women, young children, disabled elderly. If you're not in one of those categories, you don't get Medicaid. Even if you're dirt poor, you wouldn't be able to get a subsidy, and you'd basically be left out in the cold.
Well, that's not good.
I think that's terrible. And it's one of the unanticipated consequences of the sort of tortured political history of this law. When it was passed, it was assumed that Medicaid was such a good deal that every state would accept it. For the first several years, the federal government will pick up the entire cost of expanding it, and after that, it picks up at least 90%. But because of the highly polarized political atmosphere, a lot of Republican-leaning states have decided they're just not going to go along with that. And the Supreme Court, when it ruled on the law a year ago, said that basically the federal government can't force states to expand Medicaid, so it's their option. So it created this gap, and the pawns in this are turning out to be the poorest of the poor, which is extremely unfortunate. I don't think that negates the benefits of all the other people who will now be able to get coverage, that we've now guaranteed coverage regardless of your health status, but it is a glitch that is crying out for a solution. Unfortunately, I don't see Congress doing anything about it in the near future. I think mentioning health reform in Congress right now would be toxic.
I think you're right.
Yeah, no matter how you phrase it.
It might be toxic to everybody, not just Congress. Although it's necessary. Professor Robert Field is our guest, professor of health management and policy, School of Public Health, Drexel University. We're talking about the Affordable Care Act. The administration launched a new consumer information website on Monday, yesterday, to help with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. If you go to healthcare.gov or to a toll-free number and want more information, it's 800-318-2596. We're talking about it, the rollout, why it's complicated, who will benefit, who's been falling through the cracks on this. Our phone number for your calls for Professor Robert Field is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up, hour two of our program, we'll be speaking with a young man who's a poet and a mentor and works with particularly young African-American men at 10 Milwaukee public high schools in a campaign that is named Saving Our Sons, I Will Not Die Young. That's coming up, hour two. A reminder to you, this show, it will be the same show, different time, moving to the 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon time period next Monday, July 1st. So please move with us. Part of the reason we're doing this is Talk of the Nation, alas, will be leaving the air entirely on Thursday of this week. So we are moving to that time slot. On Point will air from 9 to 11 in the morning, Monday through Thursday. And we will be Monday through Thursday on the 1 to 3 time period. Science Fridays will continue on Fridays, and 45 North will continue on Friday mornings. More changes are taking place, so if you want those, go to this website, WPR.org, WPR.org. Let's go to more phone calls now for our guest, Professor Robert Field, and Tony is first from Janesville. Hi, Tony.
Hi. Thanks for your time, both of you. My question was, is there an income limit where the health care is completely subsidized? So, for instance, I make around $38,000 to $42,000 a year for a family of five, and I'm trying to plan for, you know, the coming years and figure out whether or not I have a health care payment that I have to make or not.
Where do you presently get your insurance? Is it through your employer?
Myself and my wife are uninsured, and our children are covered by Badger Care, which I can't wait for that to get dropped.
Well, you will, as of January 1st, 2014, be obligated to cover everyone in your family. For the first year, the penalty is fairly modest. It's a maximum of $95. It moves up to $695 over the next few years. And after that, it actually gets a little substantial. It can get up to about 2% of your annual income. From what you've described, it sounds like you would qualify for substantial subsidy help on an exchange. What you're describing is less than 400% of the federal poverty level. And in fact, I'm not sure what the figures are for a family of five, but for a family of four, it goes up to almost $90,000 a year. And if you're at that lower end of it, the subsidies come close to covering the entire cost. So you should be able to get everyone covered under a private policy under one of the exchanges.
And if you go to those websites, is there enough information about what insurance companies will be charging right now, Professor Field, or are they still formulating that?
They're still formulating that. They're expecting that in September they will have those numbers.
All right.
Now, a few states like California have preliminary numbers, and so far they're encouraging in terms of the rates are coming in lower than people had expected. Yesterday, Kathleen Sebelius indicated that the federal government will play a fairly active role in negotiating with insurers to keep the rates down.
I see.
But you don't know yet. You won't know till September what those rates are. The other thing to be careful of is what's the coverage. There are going to be four levels of coverage depending on what percentage of your total medical bill the insurance is going to respond to. So the most generous, the platinum, will cover 90% of your expected expenses. The lowest, the bronze, only 60%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to be aware that you get insurance and you may still end up having to pay almost half your medical bill each year.
Mm-hmm. Tony, hop over to the website, healthcare.gov.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, sir. Sure. Thanks for the call. Janice in La Crosse, hi.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Kathleen. I'm just upset because I'm 64. Mm-hmm. I'm a Catholic. I've never had the government overreach and tell me what to do, ever. I am absolutely appalled, basically.
What are you appalled
but
about?
I am absolutely against contraceptives, abortion. I'm not going to pay for that. If I'm forced to pay for that, I want to go to jail.
What's the story on coverage for contraceptives?
Contraceptives are covered as preventive care and actually are already covered under most private policies. Because they're preventive care, they're covered without a copay or deductible. So they're actually free to the patient in terms of out-of-pocket costs. The administration is still confirming the details about what to do with religious employers that have conscience objections to that. If you are a formal religious institution, a church or whatever, then you are not subject to providing contraceptive coverage. If you are religiously affiliated, say a school or a hospital, you can have a separate policy where the insured person will buy the coverage directly from the insurance company and not go through the employer. Abortion is handled similarly if you go to an exchange. The rules are somewhat different under employer-based policies, since actually most of those have historically covered abortion and contraception.
Thanks, Janice, for the call. Tom in Eau Claire, hi.
Hi, question for the professor. I have two master's degrees, and I still don't know what's going on.
It's all right.
You're not alone.
I'm 37. My wife's 25. We have a baby, and we have another on the way. Right now, we pay our own HSA account every 2 months, about $900 or $1,000. And I was wondering if you can look in your crystal ball, and what would be best for our family, to drop our current Blue Cross Blue Shield or to sign up for Obamacare?
Do you get the Blue Cross Blue Shield through an employer or yourself directly?
Ourself directly.
Okay. You can continue to get it in one of two ways, either through the exchange or outside of the exchange. But through the exchange is preferable because there you could qualify for a subsidy. There will be a change in the nature of the policy. Unlike employment coverage, the individual policies will be different. In many cases, they'll actually be better because there are now minimum standards for what they have to cover. But in your case, I would recommend sometime between October 1st and January 1st, visiting the Wisconsin Exchange website, seeing what there is, and choosing a policy that way. When you apply for it, it will ask you to enter your income, and it will automatically calculate the discount that you get through the subsidy.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. I was surprised how many states are going to have the federal government run their exchanges. It's
right.
it's in the 30s, isn't it?
34 of them, yeah.
Why so many?
Part of that is pushback in Republican-oriented states. They just don't want to do anything that might help this law take effect and succeed. Part of it is, unlike the Medicaid exception, there is a fallback. So if a state doesn't expand Medicaid, then Medicaid does not expand, and those people that we discussed a few minutes ago fall through the cracks. If a state doesn't operate an exchange, the federal government will step in, so the citizens will have access to an exchange no matter what. So it's kind of a safer way of not going along with Obamacare, because you know your people will still have access no matter what you do.
We go to Carol in Rice Lake. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you. When my husband retired, I went on his employer health insurance, and when he went on Medicare, I was forced to get private insurance, and much to my surprise, I was denied. I always thought you needed to have cancer, diabetes, heart problems, whatever, but that wasn't true.
Right.
So I went on COBRA. Well, now the COBRA's expired, and I still have 2 years until I go on Medicare, so I had to get the high-risk, the HRSP state insurance.
Right.
And the agents are telling me that when these exchanges take place, Obamacare kicks in, that the premiums will actually be higher on the exchanges, so I'll probably just have to stay on this HRSP for the next 2 years. And I'm wondering what even happens to HRSP when this Obamacare kicks in.
So I don't know what Wisconsin is specifically going to do, but you may have to go on one of the exchanges because the high-risk pool may not meet the minimum criteria for coverage. What you probably have now is catastrophic only. I'm guessing they're very high deductible.
Deductible. Is that,
well, I'm sorry, Carol, what did you say?
It's $5,000 deductible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. So it may be that isn't good enough coverage to qualify for the minimum standard and avoid the penalty. So you may have to go on the exchange. The advantage is you would be getting much better coverage. You might qualify for a subsidy, and you've only got 2 years to go. But you probably should, in fact, you definitely should be looking at your options on the exchange. And it may turn out to be more affordable than you think. The bronze tier of coverage, which is the least generous, will still cover 60% of your expected expenses. And in most states, there will be enough competition that it may be more affordable than you expect. And between now and January 1st, my advice is don't get sick.
Oh.
That's the best health insurance there is.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Man, the more we talk about this, the more I realize we could do shows on this nonstop for the next 6 months. And it's still going to be rather complicated, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and you know, for people like me and Jeffrey, it's great. Whether or not this works out for the best for the country remains to be seen. But as I was saying earlier, healthcare is incredibly complicated. Insurance is incredibly complicated, and there's really three ways we could have gone with this. One is to say we're not going to do anything. Our country has other problems. It's too expensive right now. Another is to go the other extreme and have a single-payer plan, which would be very complex in setting it up, but you, as the person getting insurance, would find it a lot easier. The third way is the middle ground, is to try to use the private market along the lines that we do right now and make it affordable and make it possible for everyone to get care regardless of their health status. And that's what we've chosen to do. And if we want a private, flexible system, it's complicated. There's just no way around that.
Mm-hmm. So what do you recommend people do? Go to the website if they're interested in learning more about this. Are you satisfied with the state of the website? Does it need a lot more to it?
I've looked at it. It has some basic answers to questions. It doesn't have a whole lot of detail. I think someone without any grounding in the area might still find it somewhat confusing.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely go back in September when there'll be more information, including prices. And if I can put in a little plug for myself,
yes,
for the Philadelphia Inquirer, our local newspaper, has a site called philly.com. It's got a health page, and I write two things for that. One is a blog called The Field Clinic, where I deal with the policy and the politics of healthcare, and the other is a blog called Healthcare Exchange, which provides information on all of this, including a question and answer page where I answer consumer questions similar to what we're doing right now.
Oh, marvelous. Well, it's a fine newspaper, and thank you. We will go to that. Thank you. We'll call you again. I hope you'll say okay.
Absolutely. I'm happy to help, and hopefully the next time you call, some of these answers will have become clearer. Just one final thought is that every health reform is complicated. Medicare was very complicated. A lot of people didn't understand it. The political opposition was intense. The doctors threatened to boycott it. The Medicare Part D drug benefit from 2006.
And on that note, we have to say goodbye. We'll call you again. Professor Robert Field, Professor of Health Management and Policy, School of Public Health, Drexel University. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and we'll return following news coming up.